Welcome back into the Badger Extra podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for Badger Extra and the Wisconsin State Journal. Joined today by Jay Kokorowski, our athletics and football reporter here for Badger Extra. And a special guest, we have Joey Kaufman from the Columbus Dispatch and dispatch.com. And we decided to have Joey on because it's obviously a big week. The Badgers are traveling to Columbus to take on number three Ohio State. So, Joey, thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me. I know you came on our podcast, the Buckeye Extra podcast, and I'll try to say something original.
Sounds good. All kinds of extras flying around here. Badger Extra, Buckeye Extra. We got all types of stuff. I love it. But as I mentioned, Badgers are heading to Columbus. The Buckeyes are 3-0 to start the year. The Badgers are 2-1. It's a 6:30 Central game for on ABC, so prime time, a blackout. I know that was kind of out there already that was going to be a blackout, but it was finally confirmed today that the Buckeyes are going to be wearing their all-black uniforms for the first time, I think, since, what, Joey, 2019?
Yeah, Michigan State in 19, I think, was the last time. They may have worn it. I don't know. I'll probably keep this track as close as I do on uniforms, but I believe that was last time.
Sure. So, obviously, a tough environment, but we have Joey on, so we want to kind of throw some questions at him about what the Buckeyes look like this year and what the Badgers can expect, because I think in Wisconsin, the mentality is kind of, yeah, they have the most talent that anybody's going to have in the Big Ten for sure. But they've made some big changes, especially on their defense this year, bringing in Jim Knowles. That was a huge storyline in the offseason because clearly throughout the year last year, Ryan Day was not happy with the defense and pretty much demoted their defensive coordinator throughout the year in the middle of the season. And so they bring in Jim Knowles from Oklahoma State. And I know it's only through three games, Joey, and two of them were against teams that they could have probably played their backups and won. But what have you seen schematically, or what are some of the differences that kind of stick out in your mind about the defense that Knowles has brought in?
It's an aggressive defense that Jim Knowles run. That's kind of the hallmark. That's, I guess, what they're best known for. It's a 4-2-5 alignment, and you're going to see a lot of pressure that they're going to try to bring into the backfield and make negative plays, tackles for loss, sacks. And the way they do that seems to be pretty creative. There have been some times where you'll see a linebacker or two blitzing, and the defensive end will drop into pass coverage. So that seems to be what they really pride themselves on, is being aggressive. It was funny because when they played Arkansas State in week two, they gave up 4 field goals. And so they kept teams from scoring a touchdown in that Arkansas State game. And Jim Knowles was asked a few days after the game how he felt about the bend, don't break label for a defense. And he said he doesn't like it very much. He says defenses are right now proposition. What they want to do is get the ball back to Ohio State's offense as quickly as possible. And I think that philosophy marries pretty well with what Ryan Day wants to do on offense and how Ohio State sees itself as a program. What Ohio State really does not want is for a team to go on this long, sustaining drive where they eat up clock. It's 70 yards, it's 6 minutes, because that means C.J. Stroud doesn't have the football. So I think with Jim Knowles' defense, what they want to do is create havoc, get stops on third down, get the ball back to C.J. Stroud and let him cook.
Makes a lot of sense. And when it's funny you mentioned that, because that's basically Wisconsin's entire mentality is grind out clock, hope that you can at least just end it with a kick, whether it's a punt or an extra point, field goal, whatever it is. Jake, but I know you had a couple questions as well. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, this is kind of, we'll flip on the opposite side of the ball. And, you know, C.J. Stroud, obviously, Heisman finalist last year, completed nearly 72% of his passes, over 40 touchdowns to only 6 interceptions. This year, through 3 games, his efficiency, 208.6, over 940 yards, and already 11 touchdowns, which, you know, that is obviously for Wisconsin fans, that's something that someone that's covered the program, you know, we haven't seen that since Jack Cohn in 2019. I guess in your eyes, just what is CJ doing and progressing within that offense, and what is he showing early on this year that's better than last year?
The thing that I think that CJ's doing better this year is throwing on the run and making plays outside of the pocket and outside of structure. And he didn't do that a lot last year. Most of the big plays, the big throws that he would do, he'd be sitting back there in the pocket and making stuff happen that way. But there was a play against Toledo last week, the first touchdown pass he threw to Julian Fleming late in the first quarter, where he's flush from the pocket and he's buying time. It's third down in the red zone, and he throws the ball to a corner while he's corner of the end zone while he's on the run. And I feel like he couldn't do that last year as much, or he really didn't try to do that as much. And that was something Justin Fields, Wisconsin fans remember him twice in 19. He would really hold on to the ball for a long time and give receivers a chance to almost reset their routes. And they would talk about the scramble drills they would do. CJ's a different type of quarterback than that, but it's sort of a newer element to his game this year, I think, than what maybe we saw from him last year.
Joey, you mentioned the aggressiveness of the front and trying to get into the backfield from Ohio State's defense. And when you look at some of the guys that they have up front, like Zach Harrison, and Jack Sawyer was one of the top players in his class a couple of years ago, and JT, I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name because I'm just going to mess it up, but he was the number one player in his class a couple of years ago, their defensive end. I mean, when you have a front like that and then a guy in Knowles who wants to get aggressive, do you just see them doing some different things? Because there used to be a few years ago, because you had a guy like Chase Young or the Bosa brothers in their years, it was kind of just line up and you can't block them, right? They kind of just relied on the fact that nobody could really stop those guys. What are you seeing that Knowles is doing with those guys up front that's maybe different or allowing them to kind of unlock? Because we saw Sawyer with a big game last week, and you know, all of them starting to kind of figure out their roles here.
The good news for Wisconsin fans is Chase Young is no longer on the roster. I don't think there's anybody who's quite like Chase Young. Ohio State does have a lot of guys who are highly ranked as recruits. JT Tuimoloau, as you said, was one of the top defensive ends in his class. Jack Sawyer was up there in the 21 class. Zach Harrison's a former five-star. But they don't have anybody quite like Chase Young where you're just going to have him line up on the edge and he's going to bulldoze his way into the backfield, whether you put one tackle on him, whether you chip him with a tight end. They don't have that guy. And maybe JT gets there. He's still a sophomore. Jack Sawyer's still a sophomore. But the way they use guys, too, is different. Like Jack Sawyer plays a position they call the Jack, which is a hybrid outside linebacker defensive spot where they're going to move him around. He's not going to line up straight along the edge every play. And even Zach Harrison, there are times they're going to drop him into pass coverage and blitz a linebacker. So they did that a little bit with Chase Young, where maybe they would drop him into coverage a couple times when Jeff Hafley was the defensive coordinator. But in general, because they don't have anybody like Chase, it feels like with Jim Knowles, what they're trying to do more is be creative and mix up blitzes, try different stuff, have different guys drop into coverage, have different guys blitz. I think they're a lot more creative defensively than they were in the previous couple of years, where Kerry Combs was the defensive coordinator, and then they had the switch last year where the secondary coach, Matt Barnes, ended up calling plays when they stripped play calling from Kerry after the second game.
You know, I cover recruiting, you know, for the State Journal and Badger Extra. And obviously, I was looking at stats for our five things to know about the Buckeyes for yesterday and the recruiting prowess. And obviously just the success on the recruiting trail has been huge for Ohio State. And what was it, top 10 finishes, top five finishes pretty much since, you know, the 2020 cycle. One name, Carson Hinsman, obviously a prominent name for Wisconsin fans from last year's recruiting cycle. Wisconsin, Ohio State, the two, you know, teams that he really kind of was choosing between. For him now being a Buckeye, and I know it's still really early as a true freshman, but any insights into how he's acclimated to the program and just where they foresee him on the line?
It was interesting that they were able to get him from Wisconsin, because usually somebody like that would be penciled in to go to the Badgers.
Right.
And they got it in a year, too, where they were switching their offensive line coach, because he signed in February, which was only a couple of weeks after they didn't retain Greg Sadrawa and hired Justin Fry. from UCLA. He was previously the offensive coordinator, offensive line coach, and UCLA hired him. But as far as Carson goes, I think for like a lot of their offensive linemen, it's going to take 2 years before they really get in the rotation. It's pretty rare for an offensive lineman, especially in the interior, to be starting or really be a major rotational piece within the first 2 years. One of the exceptions they have right now is Donovan Jackson, the left guard. But I mean, there are a lot of guys who don't become first-time starters at Ohio State, I feel like, until they're really in their fourth year. Matt Jones, the right guard, he was basically the sixth man of the offensive line in previous years. Now he's in his fourth year and he's finally started. So that typically is the more common path. There are some exceptions. Luke Whippler started, I think, last year as a redshirt freshman. He was in the second year. I get all the red shirts now confused because of COVID, but he was a second-year guy. So I think it will probably take a couple of years for Carson, just because of what the normal trajectory for that position is.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I want to wrap us up here with one more question about guys on the offense, because, you know, everybody kind of knows guys like Jackson Smith and Jigba, who looks like he's going to be able to play Saturday after dealing with some injuries here early on in the season. Marvin Harrison Jr. is having an incredible year to start. Travion Henderson was a first-team All-Big Ten back last year. But Mayan Williams is kind of a guy that I personally, when I came into the year, didn't have him like on my sheet of, hey, this is going to be another huge, highly productive guy for the Buckeyes this year. Just what's his story, and what do you think he does and brings to this offense? It's a little bit different than Henderson, and why do they get him as many snaps as they do?
His backstory is interesting, because I think of all the other pieces in the Ohio State offense, Mayan Williams was certainly, I think, not the prized blue chip recruit. He's a Cincinnati native, and in that recruiting class he was a part of in 2020, that was a year Ohio State had really gone after some really big time national recruits at the running back position. They thought they were going to land Bijan Robinson before he ended up committing to Texas, and so they had to go further down the recruiting board, and they flipped Mayan Williams from Iowa State late in that class. But they like him, they want him to be their power back a little more, and he's not as big as maybe like the Master Teague was. I don't know if people remember him. He was sort of the change of pace guy to J.K. Dobbins in 2019. But Mayan Williams is a smaller back, but pretty strong, got a lower sense of gravity, shifty, tough guy to bring down. He's, I think, a good complement to Travion, who's more of a home run hitter. Yeah, he's sort of Mayan's a guy who's harder to bring down, and shifty and tough to tackle in his own way. But he's been very big for them. He was a big part of that drive to the game sealing drive against Notre Dame, where they had to go 90 plus yards to put the game away. I mean, he broke a lot of tackles on those runs. I keep having images of Notre Dame grabbing his jersey and pulling it and not being able to get him. So that's what he can do. And he could have a big role this weekend too. Travion Henderson got hurt in the last game. Ohio State doesn't provide a ton of clarity on the injuries. He was in a boot, and the expectation is Travion will play. But even if he is available, how many carries will he get? How effective he'll be? So it's a big potential game for Mayan Williams, because Travion could be hurt and they don't have a ton of healthy scholarship guys at that position.
Interesting stuff. All right, Joey, we don't take too much of your time tonight, but make sure you go follow Joey on Twitter, Joey R. Kaufman on Twitter. Check out his work at the Columbus Dispatch and dispatch.com. Joey, thanks so much for joining us, man. And we're looking forward to seeing you on Saturday. We'll come find you in the press box.
Yeah, thanks for having me. And I'll see you Saturday.
All right, we are back. We hope you guys enjoyed Joey Kaufman's appearance here on the Bad Direction podcast. Make sure you go follow him as well. Really great work, and really a colleague we all respect here in the Big Ten. Guy does a tremendous job covering the Buckeyes in a very competitive beat. I mean, they have 20, 25 people at every media availability. It's pretty nuts. But anyways, talking about Ohio State here in this game, instead of going through our kind of typical game preview, wanted to just kind of give you guys an update on the injury situation and what we're thinking we're going to see on Saturday for the Badgers, but then kind of just lay out the exact blueprint that the Badgers would have to follow to be able to pull this game off. Because, you know, you just look at talent across the board. And if you're just going, if you just are trying to lay out exactly how Wisconsin can win this game, and you're just thinking they're going to win on talent, like, that's just not going to happen, right? Like, there's going to have to be an exact formula. So we're going to lay out like four or five different things that we think are the biggest keys to making sure that Wisconsin can at least keep it respectable, if not be able to pull off a big upset here. So on the injury front, Jake, Ches Malusi, who got banged up a little bit against New Mexico State, I talked to him on Monday. He seemed fine. He said he was all good. He said a normal or a game we weren't ahead that much, I probably would have been back out there. So nothing to worry about there for the Badgers. And then the thing that's kind of interesting is we don't know the status of Riley Malman yet. We're recording this on Tuesday. We'll check in on that again on Thursday.
Our daily checkups with Paul.
Yeah, right. The starting right tackle. And then we saw last week against New Mexico State, the Badgers clearly want to see guys like Tanner Bordellini and Trey Wettig get opportunities on the right side. I don't think they've particularly thought they've had the most production from guys like Michael Furtney and Logan Brown since Malman's injury. And I'm very interested to see if we get to Saturday, if a Wettig, who graded out highest among all the offensive linemen on Pro Football Focus, if that's what you're into, or a Bordellini is able to get in that starting lineup, or if we see a rotation again, because, you know, Bob Bostad's made it clear, like, he's going to put who he thinks is the best guy out there. And to me, when you start taking guys like Brown and Furtney out of a game that you're already kind of in hand, it tells me that you think, I want to see who is the best out of these two. I want to get game speed reps and see who is the best out of these guys.
Let's talk real quick about Tanner Bordellini. He was on the preliminary status report is out. Yeah. And we all kind of stare like, huh? And then all of a sudden, oh yeah, there's Tanner out on the field. Oh, he's getting he's going into the game. What? Okay. And so you also had Trey Wettig, which, by the way, second team center, but we know that he's played at right tackle. He's played at right guard. He can play at left guard. He told me earlier this year that he worked on the left side when Joe Rudolph was still here as offensive coordinator, offensive line coach. So you have a very versatile, we talked about this before. Bob Bostad wants players. He said in the spring, he wanted players to kind of home in on one position. And within that, you've seen Jack Nelson solidify left tackle, Tyler Beach. Joe Brenner is going to be magnificent, but it's Tyler Beach's position. Joe Tippmann is Joe Tippmann. You have, going across the line, but up until right guard, right tackle, it's going to be interesting. We saw Furtney and Brown go at right guard, right tackle. And now, okay, Bordellini, who got first team reps at center in the spring to be a viable backup for Tippmann, if anything does happen, now you have him at right guard working in, which was the fourth series of the game. It was a touchdown and two punts. And then you also had Wettig come in, and they, you mentioned it, they performed admirably. I mean, especially Wettig, who, by the, you mentioned the grade 96.5 on 43 reported reps, according to Pro Football Focus. So that's a impressive number for Wettig. And when they interchanged after the, during the game too. Right. So that's another thing I think we should probably say, like, it wasn't just Bordellini and Wettig going in at right guard, right tackle. You saw at the end of the half, Furtney and Brown come in, and they had the first series of the second half. So to me, though, yeah, you hit on the head. Bordellini is now the second team right guard in terms of the depth chart. What's going to happen against a very aggressive front? I mean, let's talk about this. Ohio State, 27 tackles for loss already this year. That's going to be a massive challenge, especially with the pass blocking, too. Can Braylon Allen also help? That's a different tangent going from there. You and I talked about that even earlier today. But so with that, it's very, I'm not going to say ominous, but I'm going to say it feels fluid. And we'll see just if we can, one, will Malman come back and just what will his status be? And two, if not, are you going to see either Brown or Wettig out on the edge? Or for that matter, are you going to see someone like Bordellini lock in that left guard or right guard spot going forward?
Yeah. It's really interesting because this is a position, offensive line, like, playing the same five guys matters a lot. Having that continuity, having that kind of feel for playing with somebody, how you two work double teams up to the second level, lots of things that's why you don't rotate a ton of offensive linemen. I think that's one area that I think going back to even like 18, 19, or 19 really, because 18 it was the same group. Going back to 19, that was when the rotation, remember that first 8, 9 weeks, there was a rotation at both guard spots and nothing was really settled outside of a couple, you know, left tackles, Cole Van Landen and Tyler Biadasz at center. Everything else is kind of fluid. And the offensive line was a B, you know, it was okay. And it was not what the Badgers needed. And then late down the stretch when they needed to win games, they ran the same five out there and they gelled. You know, I think that's what Bob Bostad is probably looking for right now is I've got to find the five that I think gel the best, have the highest ceiling, and get them the most reps I can. And who that is, we'll see. But let's move on to the blueprint here. And you mentioned something that I think is going to be probably my number one thing on offense. No limit pressure on Graham Mertz. And that's a much easier said than done, obviously, with the talent that's going to be up front for Ohio State. But this offensive line has done a very solid job in pass protection. Most of the time, you kind of alluded to it, most of the time when there's been pressure on Graham Mertz, it's been because a running back doesn't pick up the blitz or picks up the blitz and then just loses the block. I think the running backs and pass protection this week are going to be huge because, as Joey mentioned earlier in the show, these guys are bringing linebackers, they're bringing different stunts, they're bringing a more aggressive front than the usual Ohio State kind of mentality is that our four is going to beat your five and we're going to get pressure that way. So it's going to be a big test for these backs, tight ends, whoever ends up being helping out the offensive line to keep Graham Mertz up. And then it's on Mertz to get rid of the ball fast like he has been. I think that's one thing that should be encouraging to a Badger fan is Mertz has already shown this year he will get rid of the ball quickly, he'll make a quick decision, and he's going to eliminate some of the ability for the defense to get back there just with a quick throw.
Right. And you're looking at stats right now. For those that don't know, Ohio State has 8 sacks. Currently, you have 3 players that are tied for the team lead with 2. Again, 27 tackles for loss. So this is going to be a big-time matchup for Wisconsin's offensive line. And they have given up 6 sacks. They've averaged 2 per game in the first 3 contests. Would you want to put the over-under at 2.5? I mean, it's going to be an interesting battle, especially, as you mentioned, a defense that averages, gosh, they're allowing under 300 yards per game to opponents, you know, in these first quarter of the season. So obviously a huge thing in my eyes that they'll have to keep an eye on. I think going off of that to like another blueprint, which about the blueprint, it sounds like very much like the really bad, really
Jay-Z album. Hey, hold on.
No. Jay-Z, I love that album. That's great. That's a great album. I'm talking about like a bad, like young adult novel, like the blueprint. Secret CIA. Anyways, getting back on topic because it's late. Wisconsin cannot turn the ball over.
Yep. That was going to be my number 2 thing also.
You cannot have what happened against Washington State there. That was 3 takeaways and, you know, and opportune times where Jay Shaw's an interception. That's a fumble. That then several plays later, boom, Nakia Watson with the touchdown off the spin move. On top of that, then Clay Cundiff with his, you know, and obviously, and y'all go to Badger Extra and Wisconsin State Journal. I had an article today about the tight ends and their production through the first 3 games and how they've made up for the loss of Jake Ferguson with that. They have 14 receptions for 230 yards and 2 touchdowns through 3 games. That's pretty darn good. Even the level of competition is not what it was last year through the first 3 games. But you have with this team, you can talk about margin of error. You cannot have more than 1 takeaway against you. And for just to let y'all know too, Ohio State only has 1 interception and 1 fumble recovery this year so far. So if you're looking for something to get picky with this Buckeyes unit underneath Jim Knowles, it's that lack of ability to create sudden change opportunities. Now they also, I think what they're, the third down conversion defense is what, 26%?
I was going to say, yeah, they have less plays than the typical defense, but it's still right. A good point. They haven't made the big turnover plays. And sneaky thing about this Buckeyes team, this secondary is not what it was in the last regime where they were cranking out 5-star corners and guys are going to get drafted in the first round. Like, it's still good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that there's a bunch of, you know, high schoolers running around out there. They're
Colton is predicting
players.
450 yards from Graham Mertz and 7 touchdowns.
Not quite, but what I will say is that they don't. It's not the gap between Wisconsin's receivers this year and Ohio State's defensive backs is not as big as it has been. Whether that translates and whether the Badgers execute and actually make that work, different story. I'm just saying on paper, the Badgers have guys that can make some plays against this unit. And as Joey mentioned earlier, they're going to be aggressive and they're going to play man coverage. And that makes it basically one-on-one. It's going to say, hey, Marcus Allen, hey, Skylar Bell, Chimere Dike, can you get open fast and give Graham a target to, you know, beat a blitz and then make a play after the catch? So lots of opportunities there, I think, for this receiving core, but you're entirely correct. No turnovers is a huge one. And then I want to flip over to defense quick here. My biggest thing for this defense, Joey mentioned it. Ohio State doesn't want to be patient. They want quick strike. They want to score, and they want to get off the field fast, and they want to score again. They feel like if they get up two scores on somebody, the other teams really just don't have a ton of chances to get back into the game. And to me, if I'm Jim Leonard, if I'm this defensive staff, my entire game plan is make them have 12, 15 play drives because it increases their chances to have a holding, to drop a pass and make a third and long, the fumble. Like, there are lots of things, and we've seen it as, you know, viewers of Wisconsin. When you have these long drives, crap can happen as you're going, and then it can kind of get derailed, and you end up with a long drive that had nothing. So there was, you know, it's okay. It's cool when you get to the end of the game and your time possessions, 2/3 to 1/3, but you don't score on most of those possessions, it's not worth anything. So to me, if you're the Badgers defense, your goal and focus has to be slow them down, keep everything in front of you, tackle, because that's been an issue, tackle well, and keep them from those 2-3 play touchdown drives that they're putting up against everybody right now.
Right. And Wisconsin's MO, as y'all know from watching Jim Leonard's defense, it's stopping the run first. And this isn't just you're looking at a team that, you know, only passes through the air. And I was talking on a radio show earlier today telling them this is a rushing, you know, this is an offense that rushes for over 200 yards per contest, has two backs. You talk about Travion Henderson. You also talk about Mayan Williams. We said earlier, those are potent backs, and Wisconsin's going to have to stop them as well as, you know, I think the secondary, even without Alexander Smith, I think they could be up to the test. I thought they handled Washington State pretty well, but again, granted, a little shaky here and there, but you know, this is going to be a whole entirely new animal monster of an offense to face. And you have a wide receiver factory with their recruiting. And so you're gonna have to take care of that. So I'd still say like they're gonna have to take care of that run first. And then you're hoping someone like Nick Herbig gets back and creates some pressure. And on top of that too, you need to see someone else besides Nick Herbig get in the backfield. You saw Kamoi Latu come in. I think, who else was that? John
Torchio has a sack. Yep.
Torchio has a sack. And they're, you know, when you have
Jordan Turner's blitzing pretty well.
Right. And Muma, you know, laid some hits. You saw that against an extremely overmatched New Mexico State. Extremely. And nothing against Jerry Kill's program. But you saw frequently in the first game, or that third game, that first quarter, how much the Badgers were getting back in that backfield against their quarterback. So in my eye, you know, you have to get someone like Darrell Peterson, who had some pressure, had two quarterback hurries, you know, and five pressures overall by Pro Football Focus. You need to get him involved too, to create some sudden, I mean, that's another thing. Maybe I'll say, like, you have to mirror and flip what happened against the program against Washington State. You have to do that to Ohio State. You have to get them with takeaways. You have to get, if there's penalties, you know, do stuff that they have to have Ohio State shoot themselves in the foot that way too. So it's a lot to ask, by the way, Colton. I feel like these blueprints, like this 12-point process to bring, you know, to bring an upset against the number 3 team in the nation on the road in the horseshoe.
Yeah, 100,000 people in a blackout. That's gonna be tall.
Our national championship.
I mean, as you guys are obviously picking up from our tone here, like I don't think either of us are expecting to be writing about a win late Saturday night at Ohio Stadium, but. But the point is to this, there is a path. It's just, the Badgers have to play the best football they've played in years, in all honesty, best football game they've played with Graham Mertz at quarterback. And then my last key, and the thing we'll wrap the show up here, is Graham Mertz has to make, he's not going to match CJ Stroud stat wise. I don't think they don't have that level of receiver at Wisconsin. And he's not that level of quarterback. but he's going to have to make 2 to 3 plays that make a fan sitting at home be like, wow, I didn't know Graham could do that. Or like, wow, that's an improvement from Graham Mertz, because you're not going to beat Wisconsin or Ohio State in a 60-minute game running the ball and just expecting Braylon Allen to put on a Superman cape and make it happen. Like, Jonathan Taylor couldn't do it. You know, really the only running back that's really done that for the Badgers, like, recently, I put recently in quotes, is like Ron Dane back in his Heisman year where he had 4 touchdowns, like 250 yards.
Anthony Davis in 2004. I have that. He had a – I'll look that up. You keep talking. I'll come back with the stats.
Yeah, no, okay. I forgot about that one. You're correct there. But even then, that's still only 5 years later than the year I'm talking about. So that's not exactly recent history. You're not going to beat this
just 18 Ohio years State ago, man. Defense.
You're not going to beat this Ohio State defense expecting your running back to carry the load. So it's going to be Graham Mertz has to make a couple of plays that kind of open your eyeballs as a viewer and be like, wow, that was an impressive throw, or you know, that was an impressive play for him to make. So can all that happen? Can all of that happen in a row with no mistakes for the Badgers? I don't know. Probably not. Yeah. I mean, make this an 11 a.m. game at Camp Randall. And I feel like it's a little bit more likely, I guess. But at the end of the day, there's just such a gap here in the talent of these two teams that, again, we're laying out this perfect blueprint. And when you have a talent gap like that, that's the only way you can win. Like, you just have to have some lucky bounces, and you have to have things go your way in a bunch of different areas.
Right. But going back to the 2004 game, Anthony Davis, 39 carries, 168 yards and a touchdown. John Stocko, 15 to 24 for 160 and 2 touchdown passes. And if you see that, that is a perfect, no turnovers there. I don't see the fumbles there, but I digress. There was one fumble recovery. So at least there's one takeaway in that game, it appears. So,
give me those numbers for Davis again. Well, the yards and those carries.
39 carries, 168 yards, and 1 touchdown. 4.3 yards per carry. And there was no – they did not turn the ball over, it appears, that game. So,
4.3 is not even, like, that miraculous either. Like, that means that most of the time they bottom out.
And they have more than one running back than Braylon Allen. They have Ches Malusi. They have Isaac Garendo, who has looked good. I talked to him. And, by the way, folks, it's a little quick thing because we have a couple minutes left here. You'll see an article later on Friday talking about the bond between Allen and Malusi and Garendo, especially after last year where you saw some injuries to Garendo and Malusi where they bonded further, and you're seeing that with the group. So more on that later. But yeah, I mean, and one quick thing too. Okay, I was watching The Office before we started recording. Season 6, it seems serendipitous, folks, but it's what, remember that episode with Donna Newton, the bar owner, and she's trying to get a big better deal from Michael, and she's kind of flirting with Michael on that.
For Saber,
and you have, next thing you know, everyone's telling him, like, she's just trying to lower the price, and Pam just says, it's really, really, really likely, but it's not impossible. And I'll end on that.
All right. That's a good way to end it. All right, make sure you got Badger Extra all week. Get subscribed. Check out all of our coverage leading up to this game. One thing I want you guys to check out on Friday, this matchup between Jim Leonard as the defensive play caller for the Badgers and Ryan Day as the offensive play caller for Ohio State. Two of the best coaches, regardless of position or title, in college football. And two of the best play callers in college football going at it. Talk with Rex Ryan about Jim Leonard's influences and how he's approached the game, not only as a player, but as a coach, and some really insightful stuff from him and both sides about the way that these guys call plays and what they do. So really, you know, football meat sandwich type of thing, if you're really into this game, and a really good feature coming out on Friday. So make sure you check that out. Like I said, Beyond Badger Extra all week, checking everything out that we do. Lots of good stuff coming. We'll be in Columbus for this game. You know, maybe we're talking next week about one of the great upsets of, you know, the Badger program history. I doubt it, but maybe.
You never know.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And then, folks, real quick, too. Jaquez Keys, I'll be down in Ironton is what the plan is slated. I'm going to watch the 4-star running back play for Ironton. I'll have analysis up on Saturday, so check that out, too.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll be back next week.